Carve on 2SCR.
And have a conversation offline.
Don't take your father car if you can't.
Sydney's arts and culture show.
Flat Earth Society had this big conspiracy theory about
arts.
These kind of false idols.
On 2SCR 107.3.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Carve, your weekly exploration into all things arts and culture in Sydney. We're trying to keep you connected, keep you creative this lockdown. My name's Sally. How are you going today? Are you over it? I personally cannot watch new TV anymore. It's got to be old favourites. It's got to be The Office. It's got to be Peep Show. That's all I can stand. And I'm just so over anything that feels like lockdown, like walking or cooking or puzzles. Like, I started a puzzle last week. I tipped all the puzzle pieces out, had it on my dining room table, flipped them all right side up so that I could start puzzling, and I just walked away, and the puzzles pieces are still there just staring at me. And my inability to complete any tasks at the moment. I digress, though. We are here bringing you positivity, keeping you connected, keeping you creative this lockdown. Before we start the show, I'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people who are the traditional custodians of this land from where we're broadcasting. I would also like to pay respect to the elders past, present and emerging of the Eora Nation. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Coming up for you this morning, we are celebrating Sydney creativity. So you'll hear Lockie chatting to local musician Alex Partridge, who's just released a brand new single, and you'll get a tasty first listen to it later in the show. I'm going to be talking to Damien Webb about Sydney Elders, which is an exhibition about the incredible lives of four prominent Aboriginal elders from all corners of Sydney. First up, though, Ellen's chatting to Catherine Berger about the Sydney Underground Film Festival, which you'll be able to stream from the 9th of September. The Sydney Underground Film Festival is famous for programming unique, eye-opening and entertaining independent films that transgress the status quo and challenge the conservative conventions of filmmaking. This year, the Sydney Underground Film Festival is celebrating its 15-year anniversary. With a fantastic lineup of features, documentaries, short films, and competitions, this one is not to be missed. So Ellen is joined now by Festival Director Catherine Berger. There's a language warning on this one.
Hi, Kath. Thank you for joining us this morning on Carve.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So it is the Sydney Underground Film Festival's 15-year anniversary. What can we expect this year?
Firstly, 15 years, that always blows my mind when I think about that. It's just crazy to me. But, this year is, kind of huge. Last year with the pandemic, when we had to sort of pivot to online, but we've been sort of planning so many films and, we kind of really wanted to bounce back. Everyone was really excited. And it was kind of a shame to let go of some of these films and we just figured, actually, it's going to give people something to watch other than Netflix and Prime and all that. So it's going to give people a bunch of stuff to watch and partake in over this period of time. And so I'm just so proud that we're able to keep a lot of our program intact and have such a big program where it's like over 30 features and docos. We've got 9 short film sessions. And then, we're still doing our academic conference called In Human Screens. We're still going ahead with Take 48, which is going to be quite interesting considering lockdown. And the beauty of it is that if you make a film for Take 48, there's a chance it could be screened as part of the festival. Sony's come on board with some really awesome prizes, like camera prizes and everything. A really massive, lots of fun thing that's happening this year is Nat from Nat's What I Reckon. He's our juror for Take 48.
Amazing.
So I think it's going to be a ton of fun, and even though it's online, it just means people from Sydney to Australia wide can take part.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, that's a perfect opportunity to be creative at home, right?
absolutely. I really can't wait to see what people come up with, because they're going to have to get extra creative.
Yeah,
particularly if they're in lockdown.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, Kath, let's dive more into some of the films you've got. So on opening night, you were screening Sweetie, You Won't Believe It by Kazakhstan-based director Yanana Galiev. Sorry about that pronunciation, I'm sure.
I'm glad you said it, not me.
Okay. Yeah, so why is this one not to be missed?
It's funny. I admittedly don't know much about what cinema's coming out of Kazakhstan. I'm going to be completely honest.
Yeah.
But this film took me, it took me for six. It was like, someone sort of said, it's like The Hangover meets the Coen Brothers kind of thing. So, I don't know. There's a couple of films we've got where it's just like, starts off simply enough and then kind of like descends into chaos.
Mm.
So the guy who made this film too is apparently renowned for like comedy kind of direction and things like that. So he's, his characters, the script, it is so funny and it's like, it's just some like quite horror parts to it. But it's just like, ultimately a really good film. It's very funny, well written, and just from start to finish it's totally enjoyable. So I think it, I think it's just a really good one to kick start on. We kind of wanted something to be fun, something to be different. So I think people are going to really enjoy it. It is a total wild ride, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that one myself. Kath, you also touched on the theme of horror, which is showing up in a few of the films you've got. So you were showing the Australian premiere of the virus zombie film Brain Freeze, which explores timely concerns of environment and class struggles. So in what way do you think this film will resonate with this audience?
It's a film like, I guess even with the virus thing, obviously we're kind of like thrown into this state right now with COVID and everything. So I guess ultimately the virus thing is a big part of life right now. But it's just a really interesting film as to why they become zombies and, without giving too much away, like, the class struggles between the people in the town and the people who run this particular this gated community. So I guess it's the struggles between the lower class with the people who are also quite oppressive to this area. So yeah, it's a fun one to start, a fun one to kick, have as part of our festival. It's thankfully, the Canadian government really wonderful. They came on board because they're also wanting to help get their Canadian films out there. So it was something that we were able to work with in partnership with the Canadian government, the consulate here. So that film is actually only just very new, kicking off, it kicked off the Fantasia Film Festival just in July last month.
Wow.
And yeah, so it's again too, because it's I'll give this away, the green blood, as much as it is like very gory, like your zombie films, it's not, I think it actually makes it more palatable for a lot of people because it's not your traditional blood and guts everywhere kind of thing. So, I think a lot of people are going to really dig it. So,
yeah, for sure. It to me, it almost seems like a zombie White Lotus.
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think hopefully you'll be able to catch it. I'd like to know what people think about it.
And Kath, yourself, you are also the director of the feature film Vixen Velvet's Zombie Massacre.
Gosh.
Which, it's amazing. I was wondering, what fascinates you most about zombies?
Oh, gosh. for me, actually, when I think about zombie films, I've always found them a lot of fun, a lot of like, because it's completely, it is a far-fetched thing, but I guess we do question, this might sound silly, but we do question, what there is after life after death kind of thing. It's funny you bring up Vixen Velvet. It was a film that we actually, the film that we made prior to that, which was this film called Nude Study, was very serious. We had a bigger crew. We tried to take it a lot more I guess, seriously, for lack of a better word.
Mm.
And then we had, you know, like, which was amazing. Like, I'm just very proud of that film. But then we decided to completely strip it back. And then we thought, what better way to do it than shoot a zombie film? And we were in this small little town in Canada. And it's funny, when you say to people that you want to make a zombie film, so many people are like, yeah, can I be a zombie? and, you know, we had the whole town involved. We had, like, everyone, even from the, you know, the police, the fire department to, you know, just like everyone just came out of the woodworks and just wanted to be part of it. So going from, like, trying to make this really serious arty film to then making this completely fun, wild zombie film, you know, making all the fake special effects it was a lot of fun. It was like we had very minimal crew, so it was a very different experience and just a lot of fun. But whether that answers your question about why zombies, but I think it's just interesting to imagine what, you know, what zombies are like, what they would be like if they existed. But then ultimately why we made one was just purely for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's fascinating. I mean, I feel like I'm a bit of a zombie at the moment, so I feel like that will be a great film to watch.
I hear you. I mean, you know, the challenges of, you know, working from home and your body clock's completely out at times and, yeah.
The Sydney Underground Film Festival also has a fantastic lineup of documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
And a theme I noticed was women and punk music. Could you please tell us a bit more about the films you've got?
Yeah, sure. It's like stuff too. I mean, it's probably everywhere actually, but music documentaries are such a big thing. Like everyone's like really, and you know, even at stuff over the last couple of years, we've shown so many, you know, they have these great turnouts. Everyone's kind of like really, yeah, I guess music plays such a big part in people's lives. And so this year we have two, which is, and it is very cool. You got women, you know, leading the way kind of thing. Two very different films. So Fanny, The Right to Rock, which is like this, Filipino, American, garage band, that, you know, they kind of like were heading for fame and fortune, I guess, and it just really didn't happen. And so we're kind of like, it's like going back to look at sort of this film, this band and the women today, and they're still rocking out, and to like, you know, all the challenges that they had to face because of their background. So, you know, it wasn't easy for them. Challenges of, you know, racism, just even women, being queer women too on top of it. So they kind of had everything kind of against them. And, you know, also, too, the challenges of being a mum, because one of them, you know, has a baby, and, you know, and how do you balance, you know, your work life with having children? Something that I find very hard. Even I have three children myself, and it's a real challenge to balance, particularly, you know, all women worldwide have this challenge, and, you know, it's just like, how do you balance raising a family with your dreams and desires? And yes, it's a real challenge. And so, you know, in this film, it sort of like really goes into, you know, how things played out for them. And I guess that's a little bit close to my heart in a sense, because, you know, sometimes I feel, if not making about myself or anything, but, you know, once you have children, you know, it's not all about you, and, you know, you really have to try and balance things, and it is fucking hard.
Yeah.
We've got some Australian stuff, which is really good too. An Ideal Host is a lot of fun. Also the documentary, going back to documentaries, Josh Belafonte's documentary, The World's Best Film. It's a really interesting documentary where, you know, he literally kind of, you know, I think he was going on to become a lawyer or something a number of years ago, and he kind of got told that he had this tumor, I think it was. So he basically sort of made him question what he really wanted to get out of life, and so he goes on this journey around the world, and obviously he couldn't do that now, obviously. He literally goes like everywhere around the world, you know, to London, to Romania, to all these different places, and, you know, it kind of interviews people about you know, these really some, you know, seemingly you might think ridiculous things, but, you know, people that are the world's best, you know, taxi driver or whatever. So, yeah, it's a really interesting documentary, and he's just, you know, I think he interviews a number, over 10 people in it, of, you know, what makes them the world's best and who's to say, you know, what, you know, you could easily say I'm the world's best this or I'm the world's best that. So it's really interesting. Yeah, I think it's a really, really nice documentary. I think, yeah, I think a lot of people are going to like that. And the same with another one called Cannon Arm and the Arcade Quest.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it kind of makes you think, like, who's to, you know, your definition of success can be so many different things. And it doesn't, the success doesn't mean, need to mean money, and it doesn't need to fame and fortune, you know what I mean? So, again, with Cannon Arm, he wants to play a vintage arcade game for 100 hours and...
Oh my gosh!
You know, he's renowned for playing this old vintage arcade game called Garus. I never know how to say it. Garus. And he already holds the record for playing it for like 40 hours straight, I think it is. And he wants to do it for 100 hours. So where you think this film is going to be about this challenge, it ends up being about so much more and about the friendships that he has, that he makes all these other gamers. And it's not, honestly, that film is not for gaming. You don't have to be a person that loves gaming. It's just the characters, really, yeah, really interesting, funny characters. So, yeah, I think that one's going to go down really well too.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of dedication, 100 hours. Wow. What a fantastic story.
And the director does such a good job, you know, like where you think you'd just be filming someone playing a game.
Yeah.
You know, really do see this, but the way he actually approaches the filming of it is actually really good and interesting, and he did an incredible job. So,
yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait for that one. Kath, thank you so much for joining us today on Carve.
Oh, no problem. I could have gas bagged all day.
Me too.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope people can tune in. It is on demand for the whole time from the 9th and 26th of September. So you can buy passes and try and watch as much as you want, or you can just pick a one-off film and join in for sure.
Yeah,
thank you.
Try the 100 hours. No, we're not recommending that.
No, maybe not.
Thanks, Kath.
Thanks so much, Ellen. Thank you.
Ellen was just speaking to Catherine Berger, the director of Sydney Underground Film Festival, which is celebrating its 15th anniversary this year. The program can be streamed from the 9th to the 26th of September from the comfort of your own home. Tickets can be found at suff.com.au. Next up, Lockie's chatting to Alex Partridge about his brand new single. To get us there, here's some announcements.
Sydney Sacred Music Festival. Experience the unexpected. September 14 to 18, 2021. Mongolian throat singing. Folktronic Latin grooves from Melbourne. A Jamaican reggae legend. Grammy-nominated Tibetan Tenzin Chogyal. Inexus, blending liturgical singing with improvised jazz. Songs of Loss from the Pilbara WA. And so much more. For more information, visit sydneysacredmusicfestival.org. Online September 4 to 18. The Sydney Sacred Music Festival, a 2SER media partner.
Hi, this is DJ Meme from the Back to Funk radio show, keeping you company along with all the good people here at 2SER during lockdown. Tune into the Back to Funk radio show Mondays from 12 to 2 p.m. or Friday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. Hope you're keeping safe, looking after yourselves and keeping the music strong here on 2SER 107.3 and 2SER.com.
You're listening to Carve on 2SER, and guess what? Friend of the show, indie singer Alex Partridge, has released a brand new single during lockdown. Can You Remind Me came out on all streaming platforms yesterday, and Alex joins Lockie now to talk all about it.
Alex Partridge, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me yet again.
I know, pleasure, yes, yet again. It's the sequel, Alex Partridge 2. Or Alex Partridge, the Chamber of Secrets, or Two Towers, or two Alex, two Partridge.
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, congrats. Honestly, congrats, because you now are joining the ranks of bands like Fergus Bailey and the Teeth, just to name one, who have appeared on this show with me now twice for the year 2021. So top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, I'm honored. I'm honored to be up there with the Ferguson that was it and the Teeth.
Fergus Bailey and the Teeth there.
Fergus Bailey and the Teeth.
I don't know why we're giving them a plug. This is your interview, man. This is your interview. Yeah. We're talking at you. We're talking about the fact that just yesterday you released your brand new single, Can You Remind Me? Let's talk about it. What's this song all about? Where did the inspiration for it come from? When did you write it? Just give me the whole backstory.
Oh, God, to go back now. I guess the inspiration was pretty simple. It's just, I guess, the concept of whenever you kind of driving your car on your own and you kind of just get lost in that sort of space and your mind starts to wander. It's probably not the best time for your mind to wander when you're driving machinery,
you're autopilot. You know, I understand that.
Yeah, I know. It happens. And no one got hurt, so it's fine.
It'd be good. It'd be interesting if it was about a car crash. It's like,
yeah, it'd be a very different song. it's just pretty much about that, just how your mind wanders and starts contemplating things. And then when I wrote it, oh God, probably like 9 months ago or something.
Yeah,
I think from starting a song to finishing and then recording and mixing and then promoting it to the point where it's released is, it, as you know, is a very long process.
Yeah.
So it kind of just all blurs into one a little bit. That's why it's always exciting to release it, because it's been on my radar for so long, but no one else has heard of it yet. But
absolutely,
but now they can.
Absolutely. I'm sure that when you wrote it, you thought maybe that by the time you were going to release it, that that lockdowns and things like that might be a thing of the past and that
I know
the world might be moving forward in some way. Didn't we? Exactly, especially in Sydney. We thought we were done.
I know. We jinxed it now we're back. But that's all right. I'm sure we'll get out of it again. Yeah, shortly.
I'm sure we will.
I mean, fingers crossed.
Yeah. It's been a few months since our last chat back in May, I think it was, when you were promoting.
Was it May?
I think it was. I'll have to fact check myself there. I think it was.
You're probably right. I can't remember, but
yeah.
That's gone quickly.
Yeah. And at the time you were promoting your single, There's No Way. Obviously, since then, as just mentioned, the landscape of Sydney and stuff is changed pretty dramatically. But what have you been up to?
Yeah.
What have you been up to during this time? How have you been keeping busy during lockdown?
Well, I'm still working in the fitness world. Basically taken work from one-on-one training from the gym to a park, which, you know, is a ball of fun. I'm having a very different lockdown to a lot of people from what I've heard, because, you know, everyone's kind of, as the name suggests, locked away, and I'm out, you know, talking to different people in a safe way, obviously,
before
people coming knocking on my door and interrogating me. But
it's okay. We won't give away your address today.
Yeah, so no, we won't. Yeah, no, no.
Even
please.
If they that's, did, that'd be... there's no way to find you. So.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's no way. There's no way.
There's no way. wow.
But yeah, so that's
is I this know. A lockdown yeah, album no, just, you're creating? I'm just wait a second.
Oh,
I'm
I know.
Piecing all the titles I together. Know. Can you remind me not to leave my 5 kilometer radius?
yeah, that, I just cut that. I cut the full name so people wouldn't, you know, they have to think for themselves a little bit.
Exactly.
So that's pretty much what I've been doing, and then on the weekends, just, you know, walks and watching shows and you know. I've been on a few walks, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
I think that's all there is to really do when you go outside.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
grab a coffee and go for a walk. So, yeah, it's been a very exciting lockdown.
What's the most exciting place in your 5 kilometer radius? I'm trying not to give away where you live, but
I won't drop too many like big landmarks or anything like that. But, you know, I look forward to the little things at the moment, like my morning coffee and.
There you go.
My second morning coffee, and you know, sometimes a third if I'm really feeling it. But I know that's I do enjoy it. But oh gosh, yeah. The most exciting thing. I couldn't even tell you.
Okay.
But, you know, we've been lucky with the weather so nice. Far to this
yeah,
point, working
true.
Outside. So I can't be too upset about that. But yeah, no, it's been plugging away really.
Yeah, that's
why I'm keen to release having keen to have released the song and yeah, now we're here.
It's pretty
there you go.
I will admit it's pretty bold. I've been speaking to a few musical artists over this period because we can't promote like theatre or other such live things. So it's mainly been about song releases. And something I've always kind of mentioned or asked them is it's quite a bold strategy, I think, to release a song during a lockdown. I mean, I'm sure it's got its pros and cons, but was there a thought process thinking that maybe more people are at home and need content, so they might get more streams or yeah? And was there any particular reason that you thought now, or was it just always going to be now?
Well, it was originally going to be around this time anyway, and I think you know you kind of want to be consistent with your releases as much as you can, but I think at the same time when you take away the live aspect and try and hunting for gigs and stuff like that, it's you lose a lot of I started losing a lot of motivation and drive for that side, so all the music side. So I thought if I decide to release a song, it'll keep my head in the game and my motivation up, so I have stuff to do, you know, promoting it and trying to share it on social media and reach out to contacts. It just keeps me motivated. I remember last lockdown, it was a real struggle to try and like get back into things because you just just lose all that, you know, drive that you have normally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because obviously there's not much going on. So it was kind of more so for me, just giving myself, you know, something to look forward to. And you know, I was just keen to release something. And as you say, people are at home, so they can listen to it. And you never know, that could be a chance for more listeners to tune in and listen and you know, listen to it. So
yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of the motivation for me to release it now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Lockdown's also been good for your Instagram content. I've seen recently watched a video on your Instagram, which is at Alex Partridge Music. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I nailed it.
Which was,
you've nailed that.
There we go. I'm a pro. and it was your acoustic version of your latest single before this one, There's No Way, featuring not one, not two, but three.
Ah, yes. Three of me, my triplets we are.
The triplets. Yeah, I was like, wait a second. I thought he was a solo actor. He actually does have a band, it turns out.
Yeah, we just take turns coming out, you know, and doing our bit. And we've passed as one person for all this time.
Exactly.
No, I've got my brother to thank for that editing.
Oh, there you go.
Video editing.
Man, your family.
I don't even know.
Your family. So talented.
We're not numbers people, but we're creatives.
Yeah.
You won't catch us doing your tax return, but
yeah.
I've got two.
So it's just your brother and your sister. Yeah.
Yeah. My sister does the album artworks and my brother films all my stuff. I'm useless, just in the middle there. You know, just they do all that other stuff for me. I'm very lucky.
I would definitely not say useless. It's pretty much
not useless, but
pretty
yeah, they do it.
But that's a great segue because I was actually going to mention one of the things that I'm so stoked about with this release is that the funky album artwork from your sister is back. Praise
done
be,
it again.
Praise be to the powers above that we can.
I know. the artistic hand.
Does she have a art Instagram or like some place where people can check out her work just for a plug or something?
Yeah, I think at Lily Jane Creative would be your best
at
your
Lily
best
Jane
bet
Creative.
For that sort of thing.
Go check it out.
Go check it out. She's good at that stuff.
Speaking of, does your brother have an account or some place people can see his video work?
It's called, I think, Folio by Max.
Folio
one
by
word,
Max. Cool.
Yeah, like as in like portfolio, but without the port.
Without the port. Let's leave the port out this time.
He's left the port out this time.
Well, that's great. I mean, literally everyone, if you want to check out this family, is hit follow on Alex Partridge Music, Lily Jane Creative, and Folio by Max. So that's
Oh, you've done well there. You remembered both of them. That was so good.
And if I can, then you at home or in your car can as well. Yeah. That's how simple
it is. And if you forget, then just scroll back 20 seconds and listen to it again and you'll be able to remember it.
Unless you're listening to live radio, in which case do not, because you were driving.
In which case, don't try and do that. Otherwise, your mind might wander.
Just look how Alex's full circle. In Can You Remind Me?
Full circle. That was next level.
That was next level. Honestly, a lot of elements.
You can't plan this stuff.
A lot of elements to this interview have been quite otherworldly, and I'm quite impressed with both of us. Alex, thank you so much for joining me again. It's been a pleasure having you back on the show, and I'm sure that this is not the last that we'll hear of you on this show.
I'm going to go for the hat trick. I want to take it above Fergus Bailey and the team. I want to be.
You can't butcher their names, all right? I got both your siblings' Instagrams correct.
I know. I was nervous there for a second. I was like, oh, no, I'm going to get it wrong. But
that's all good. That's all good. Thanks so much.
I'll come for number three. I'll come back for number three.
We're coming back for Prisoner of Azkaban. It's confirmed. We're doing it. We're going to do...
That's it.
We might go for Tokyo Drift, in fact, at some point later in the year.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
The pressure's on, right? Let's go.
I'm down. So there you go.
There you go. You heard it here first. Alex Parker is down. All right, we really do have to wrap this up now, but thank you so much again, Alex.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Cheers.
That was Lockie chatting to indie singer-songwriter Alex Partridge about his latest single, Can You Remind Me, which is available on all streaming platforms now. And we're very excited to give it its radio debut right now on Carve. You're listening to 2SCR. Here's Alex Partridge.
InnoWest Council currently has a range of grants open to enable the community to develop projects and programs to address local needs. Successful grant proposals will align with the Council's Community Strategic Plan. Grants available include arts, community and multicultural. Applications close September 3. See Council's website for guidelines, eligibility criteria and the application form. InnoWest.nsw.gov.au/grants. InnoWest Council sponsors 2SER.
Would you like Carliola singing on your next single? Due to the COVID-19 lockdown, we've extended our deadline for our Carliola song competition. So if you have a great boogie, soul, funk or disco sounding track, head over to 2scr.com/carlycomp to enter, and you could have your next song pressed to vinyl with Carly as the vocalist. Brought to you by 2SCR, Groove Scooter and APRA AMCOS.
Before the announcements, you heard Alex Partridge's brand new single, Can You Remind Me? You're listening to Carve Arts and Culture on 2SCR, and this morning we are celebrating Sydney. When you think of Sydney, you might think of the Harbour Bridge or the Opera House, or maybe you think of Town Hall or Bondi Beach. Well, the Sydney Elders exhibition from the State Library of New South Wales fully changed my perception of our fair city. The exhibition explores the stories and histories of four Aboriginal elders who've watched the Northern Beaches, Redfern, Botany Bay and Blacktown grow and change. It explores the history of these four suburbs through the eyes of people who have seen them grow and develop to what we call home today. And here's Damien Webb, the State Library's Indigenous Engagement Manager, to tell us more.
Good morning, Damien. You're here to talk about the Sydney Elders online exhibit, now showing on the State Library website.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Sally.
And the experience begins with the line, in Aboriginal communities, our elders are our libraries. They hold our knowledge and connect us to our past while strengthening our future. And who are these elders that we meet in the Sydney Elders exhibition?
Yeah, so the Sydney Elders exhibition, which originally launched as a physical exhibition and has now been kind of translated online, focuses on four elders from around Sydney. So Uncle Dennis Foley, Auntie Esme Timbury, Uncle Charles Chickamadden, and Auntie Sandra Lee. And these are four elders from different areas around what we now call Sydney, and with different histories and experiences relating to the building and the growth of the city that is often not acknowledged when we think about the city and walk around these built-up environments.
Yeah, they come from four very distinct and different areas of Sydney. So what we know today is Western Sydney. They come from Southern Sydney. One comes from Southern Sydney. One is from Redfern and the other is from the Northern Beaches. And one thing that really surprised me about the Northern Beaches was that Aboriginal people survived in great numbers there until the 1950s. So what were the other sort of hidden Easter eggs that surprised you about this exhibition?
Yeah, I suppose this was the first exhibition that I saw at the State Library when I moved over here from Western Australia. My family are Palawa from Tasmania, so I'm quite used to the experience of having your elders diminished or only ever recognised when people talk about ancient history or traditional culture. And then there's this kind of huge gap in what we talk about that starts up again probably in the 60s and 70s, around the time of the referendum when we re-entered the public consciousness. But we lose a lot of agency in those years in between. And what I found most striking was the way this exhibition and the work Jonathan did in particular with these elders really undermines those assumptions, really removes and kind of challenges that idea that people still carry that the city was entirely imposed upon us. I mean, obviously colonization and the build-up of Sydney and other cities was an imposition and did result in a lot of people being relocated and killed and divorced from their language and culture. But it was constantly surprising to myself and the thousands of people that were coming through this exhibition, just how integral to the city, the building of the city, the life of the city, the social history of the city, even outside of things like the well-known Redfern AMS and, you know, what people think they know about La Perouse and how long people have been occupying that area. So for me, it was absolutely wonderful and definitely made me think that I might have made the right choice in moving over here to work for this library. And I definitely noticed that among the people that were visiting, and particularly Aboriginal people, that could, you tend to hold your breath when you go into exhibitions about Aboriginal culture as an Aboriginal person. You tend to really expect that it's either not going to be done well or that it's not going to tell our stories the way that we tell them to each other. And what I think was the most stunning part of that was that it really did feel like you were going into these elders' lounge rooms. You were sitting with them. You were holding space with them. You were hearing things they wanted to tell you. Which is really a very different energy that you don't see in a lot of exhibitions, particularly the library, where we have a history of quite didactic, quite information and record and fact-based exhibitions. So it really was an opening up of some space and breathing room for these stories to be told.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed the very sort of slow pace of the films that Jonathan made and the beautiful golden Sydney light that he used throughout the films, and it really takes you to a emotional place. I think it makes you think about your own parents and grandparents who are of that older generation, and kind of bridges that gap between this foreign and other and different to me because of these archival photos, because you can see these landmarks that you've grown up around or you see every day and that they saw the same things. So I found that just beautiful.
It is a really interesting idea that with the number of exhibitions we've worked on, particularly the last few years, really have gotten us to this point of understanding that there's a tendency to assume that only non-Aboriginal people focusing on history, you know, have a reverence for the city, can contemplate this history with all of its traumas and warts and issues, with any sense of optimism or joy. And for Aboriginal people, we've usually been relegated to dealing with the traumatic aspects, which is, you know, a huge part of it. But we do still have joy. We, you know, there were still birthdays and people still fell in love. People still had human stories within these big movements. And I love exhibitions like this that allow us to see these humans moving through the history. And that is, you know, honestly, a privilege that has only been afforded to non-Aboriginal participants in history until quite recently. And I think it was quite surprising. We even had a school that traveled from London, I believe it was, from England to visit this exhibition specifically. So for me, that was just such a mind-blowing reversal of this colonial idea that we have people coming from the mother country to see stories about Aboriginal elders within this, what was a penal colony from their perspective. And to me, that really speaks volumes to the hunger that people have to see these stories, to know these stories, to hear, you know, the ways that we thrived and our humour and our humanity, I suppose.
Mm. And Auntie Esme Timbury, she does shell work, and Uncle Charles Chicken Madden, he makes ceramics. So were they available to be viewed in the physical exhibition?
They were, and also, again, started a new kind of process for the library in which we've actually begun acquiring those sorts of materials as part of the exhibitions we work with communities on. So that beautiful shell church is actually part of the State Archive collection now. In 500 years' time, that will be seen as part of the fabric of our history and part of the archives alongside these journals and documents and Western records of Sydney. That's continued through quite recently with the Dirubbin exhibition that's on presently. And the Carla Dickens works that were purchased as part of the 8 Days in Kamei exhibition. So using these opportunities to not only platform and prioritise Aboriginal stories, but to take that a step further and ensure that we have a lasting record of this, that our exhibitions and our stories aren't just ephemeral and experiential, that that is a really important component, but we need to leave a lasting legacy and to be able to work with Auntie and Uncle and acquire these beautiful objects that have these incredible connections to their own cultural practice and to this broader history of Sydney is a real privilege.
Mm. And the other thing I noticed about the exhibition was that I think when some tourists come to Sydney, they come and see the harbour or they go to the rocks, but this exhibition really centred Western Sydney as well as Redfern and Southern Sydney. I was wondering what you thought about the history of these spaces in Sydney and what can we learn from the exhibition about these other areas?
Yeah. As someone who's not from Sydney, I have to admit that since moving here, I've also been a little confused by what seems to be a very almost Macquarie Street kind of definition of Sydney. What we tend to view as Sydney comes down to, you know, four or five square blocks that you know, while they are clearly connected to a lot of history and stories, are not the be all and end all. And so there's kind of an unofficial tagline at the library, at least since I've started here, which is, you know, more than Macquarie Street, we need to represent beyond what we see now as the city. And what we view now as the city was not what Aboriginal people viewed as the city, wasn't even what non-Aboriginal people, the early settlers and colonists, wouldn't necessarily recognise what we now refer to as the city of Sydney. And I think, you know, to bring it to what we're experiencing now, we can see the lack of support and infrastructure and acknowledgement of these communities. We can see it in the way that things like this pandemic are spreading, that we have a tendency to protect the city, but that doesn't necessarily always extend to the people who live and work or whose families lived and worked building that city and who were always on the fringes. And I think very few people still to this day understand that kind of fringe dweller, that notion that, you know, the people that were where I live in Erskineville, the history of the railroad workers, the number of Aboriginal families that lived and worked around Erskineville until that work was completed, and then they were forced out further and further away from the city. So I think if you do look historically at what we define as the city and who we price out of living there, and who we see as the leaders and the people that I identify so strongly with that central notion, that we can really look at this as this expansion of the city, but then a shrinking that seems to start to happen after about the 70s, when a lot of that infrastructure and those borders were starting to really harden up. And we saw the ways that, and it wasn't just Aboriginal families. There were a lot of poorer families that were living amongst Aboriginal people. And it's always quite surprising that the historical racism we're keenly aware of in the archive and in the way people understand how we've grown as a country. There were huge patches of time where people were just living alongside each other. There was a functional form of reconciliation that wasn't based on protocols and unpacking history and decolonizing authority the way that we do it now, but was actually just a result of people living together and working together to build the city. And I think the erasure of Aboriginal elders and their contributions has had a huge detrimental impact on how we define the city. And I know for younger Aboriginal people as well that aren't always connected to their families, it's a real point of pride. Of course, we can be proud of our culture and language, but we can be just as proud of our granddad who built railway tracks and locomotives. We don't need to choose which side of our history and whether, you know, it's purely cultural things that we can take pride in. And I think that the Elders exhibition really helped people to understand that bigger picture.
Mm. Wow, Damien, food for thought. Thank you so much for joining us on Carve today.
My absolute pleasure. Please jump online and have a look at the exhibition. and have a look at the ways that we've kind of tried to translate that online. There are a lot of moments where you can just sit with those elders and sit with some quiet contemplation and be outside and hear the birds, which I think at the moment on week 10 of lockdown, it's a really important way that people may be able to start to empathize with Aboriginal families that throughout so much of our history were controlled by government, did have their movements restricted, weren't able to freely access country and family. And I think, I hope that coming out of this pandemic and lockdown, that we have a real point of connection and strength there amongst all of us.
You just heard Damien Webb talking about the Sydney Elders exhibition, which you can now view on the State Library's website. And that's the show today. As always, we'll put links and more information about all that we've covered on today's show on our website, 2scr.com/carve-arts. Thanks for carving out your time on Saturday morning for some arts and culture. I hope we cheered you up. Here's Yothu Yindi featuring Baker Boy with Treaty 18.
But you're gonna violent that man up on me standing in equal. All the elders talking treaty on the microphone leave. The Baker Boys, the next episode of the sequel. We need to find a way to be really proud. Spiritually loud, end up high in the cloud. I'm like a bird looking down. Every woman, every man, I'm a god, I can reap my luck land. Connected to the land. Limit treaty, dama. Do a napuru wanga, do a numalang wanga. Napudazi, dara di apanga. That way you're gonna marki muma, marki muma wanga. Respect to the elders that passed on. Left us the legacy and song to carry on. Let's make the treaty. Let's get it on. Call our old man, keep the fire burning strong.
Well, they heard it on the radio, and they saw it on the television. Back in 1988, all those talking politicians.
Take a stand. All languages, tribes, laws, and bands. Two moieties, just like yin and yang. Promises can't just appear into the sand. We gotta put all differences aside. 40,000 years we have survived. Through the forced simulation and the genocide. Can't cry anymore cause the trees are dry. All plans up aside, it's so critical. People say this will take a miracle. Break the political, fight is all clinical. It's about something more spiritual. That way you'll know malali and the day and world. While you make you rip within and up and you rip within.
Majority,
friend of mine, yelling treaty. Need an agreement, no secret. This time let's do it right and we make sure we keep it. Can't change the past, but we can stem the bleeding. Equality, acknowledgement is all we are seeking. One land, one mob, that's all we believe in. This needs to happen now. Do we really need a reason? Not here to take over, here to take back. Written all over your face, brother man, face facts. For centuries, my people felt trapped. And to think a piece of paper could have changed or that. But as it stands, the paper's blank. It's not okay to be okay with that. Let's rewrite history, spirit, mental, and physically. Feel no treaty, it's killing me.
My dad wrote this song 25 years ago, Treaty, and still we are waiting for our treaty. Where is our treaty?
We want our treaty now.